Drummond again, the pub where I was born. He played it from the night down to the peaceful early morn. He sued the souls of psychos and the men who had the horn, and they all looked very happy in the morning. But Jimmy didn't like his place in this world of ours, where the other man brought storm in his decks and he had too many pairs. So I sad to see the grieving of the people that I'm leaving, and he took the road for God knows in the morning. We walked into the station in the rain.
Well, hello and welcome to this this week's St. Patrick's Day episode of Generation Goat. I'm John Martin from SongsToSaveYourLife.com, and with me, as always, is Chris Clark of Geek Force 5. Chris, say hello.
Hello.
And here we are. Rather than having fun and partying and doing exciting St. Patrick's Day things, we are recording a podcast.
Which is surprisingly difficult, we have learned. But we're not going to talk about that.
We're going to talk about happy things and no software problems that make me want to go out and drink even more on St. Patrick's Day.
Provide a free pint of green beer with every record for free app that is on the internet. I think that would be cool.
What we have learned today is that the word free does not mean free. And that's sort of reassuring, I think.
Very reassuring.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, Chris.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you, too. Have you drunk at all yet?
No.
Will you be drinking at all before the day is out?
No.
Me neither. And that is a sad, sad thing, isn't it?
That's one incredible score for our dead Irish homies.
Actually have some dead Irish homies. I don't believe I have any dead Irish homies in my background.
Despite the fact that I'm spending my St. Patrick's Day in England, which is about the worst possible place to celebrate an Irish-themed holiday, especially these days. I actually, pretty much anybody in my family who was actually Irish is now dead. And there we are. So, hooray! It's St. Patrick's Day.
This is just where I make funny noises for a second.
I'm wearing no green. There's no plastic leprechauns. There's no green beer, no green river, not even so much as like green food coloring in a glass. Here I am. But I did make a nice St. Patrick's Day playlist for everyone. So
yes, that was very excellent of you.
Yes, which some people didn't feel they needed to read or listen to. But that's
well, I wrote a post about how I thought it was good music to get smashed to, and maybe that's not necessarily true.
Which proved that you hadn't listened to it. It's fine. No, it's fine. I don't know why I would expect my co-host, my faithful companion in all things web, to really care.
No, I don't know why you would have expected that either.
Maybe I will drink by the end of the day. Maybe it'll be your fault.
Oh, man. What a downer! What a downer podcast this is so far. How do we spice things up?
Look, but the fact of the matter is that by this point in the day, not that anybody's going to be listening today per se, but we can imagine that if this is out, let's say tomorrow, then most people are going to be hungover anyway, so they're not really going to be looking for excitement.
That's true. That's true. It will probably take them a little while to realize that they're listening to anything at all.
And plus, if they're listening to our podcast, frankly. They're not looking for excitement anyway. They're probably using us to get away from the exciting things of the world. But we can try. What's exciting on your site this week?
Well, not that much. No,
you get that right.
This week we are talking about Irish bands, kind of. We haven't really started yet. Talking about J.J. Abrams, the producer, and everything that he does, including Lost, including Fringe, which I hope to check out for the first time, and the new Star Trek film, which might be something to talk about. We're also theoretically talking about South by Southwest, but it's over now, or at least the interactive portion is.
And yeah, but the music part is just starting.
That's true. That's true. So there'll be plenty to talk about there. And then we are also launching the first annual Geek Force 5 tournament, which is a tournament of the 64, hopefully biggest, I tried to make them biggest or most popular obsessions that I could figure out in the four of the five major categories we talk about on the site.
Now, I don't read your blog. I mean, frankly, I don't care for it. But how's that going so far?
It's going all right. I am actually looking forward to spending more of my day today tackling the software hurdle of how to let people vote on who the winners are going to be. I'm actually not going, having just spent this amount of time on Skype software, I have decided now, just now, that if I can't make the voting happen in like 20 minutes, that I'm just going to have people throw stuff in the comments and I will figure it out from there because I don't want to spend any more time dealing with software. But so basically people will get to vote on who they think should win in matchups, including the Disney versus Lost and Judd Apatow versus Buffy the Vampire Slayer and things of that nature. And The Daily Show versus the WWE is another matchup from the first round.
I'd like to see Jon Stewart as a wrestler.
Jon Stewart as a wrestler wouldn't be a bad idea.
What would be his wrestling name? Who would his character be?
Huh. That's a good question. He does know how to lay the smacketh down, to paraphrase Dwayne Johnson, aka The Rock.
It's hard to guess, but I think it should start there.
Maybe something to do with Zen, the moment of Zen. I don't know.
We'll come back to it.
He should have a wrestler name, and perhaps if for this first round of the tournament, we will get him a name. That will be our goal.
I think if you're going to have a competition, you've got to put them on even footing. You know,
right? Well, what would that require from the WWE to be on even footing from The Daily Show? That would require quite a bit. Wrestling in suits. There was a guy, I think, way back in the day who did that, and his whole thing was like...
Well, there was the Million Dollar Man.
There was the Million Dollar Man. There was also a guy called IRS, I think. Yeah. I think, who hung out with the Million Dollar Man. Something like that.
Wow. Anyway. You know, when I said the Million Dollar Man, instantly in my head... I knew that his name was Teddy DiBiase, and
I think it was Ted DiBiase, wasn't it? It was close, but, whatever.
But the fact that that information is even half there, although I gotta say, I've been stuck in the 80s the past week or so. I've been, I have a game controller for my laptop, and I've been playing Nintendo games lots, and I finally, only 15 years too late, or 20 years too late, managed to beat RBI Baseball 3 on hard mode. So, well done, everyone. The 1990 Oakland Athletics are victorious.
I don't think anybody from MLB made it into the tournament, but Mario did. Yeah, Mario is up there.
Who's he up against?
Mario in the first round is up against Street Fighter, the whole cast. Yeah. Kind of a tough one. So people have complained about not really complained, but they're like, wow, these first round ones are tough. And I really just decided them at random. I didn't try to make them tough.
What's the most controversy causing
one? So far, the one I received a complaint about, because that's how much people love to comment on my site. Damn you bastards! Comment now. So far. The one that received the most complaint was putting Disney up against Lost.
Yikes.
Yeah. On the one hand, you have sort of years and years and years of history. And on the other hand, you
have... racism.
Yes, yeah, that too. and not so subtle racism, if
and
you go...
sexism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a guy who froze his head and keeps it in a jar somewhere.
Just like Ted Williams.
Yeah, so that one got some controversy. Other people have complained that they very small comic books are going up against very big franchises. Batman is mm-hmm. taking on Fables, which is a pretty beloved series of the new millennium, but it's not beloved by everybody or the world over. Most people probably have no idea what Fables is. So
guilty.
Yeah, it's about fairy tale characters living in the real world.
Did you just read that off a crib sheet?
No, I didn't. No, I'm good at reciting marketing one-liners.
I see.
I
noticed also that you have Star Wars up against Firefly, which is it's really going to come down to a battle of the junk ships. Is it the Millennium Falcon that captures your imagination, or is it in fact the Serenity?
Yeah, well, and you know, I think what's going to, assuming the traffic goes up and people start commenting on these and voting, I think it's going to be a question of how many people are, like we were talking about last time, completely turned off by Star Wars at this point, and they're like, come on, Firefly is much better in the grand scheme of things, and Star Wars is overly praised, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. You might also note that the Beatles are taking on Britney Spears in the music bracket. Because even if she isn't really, we don't really obsess about her for her music, that's really the only category that she fit into. And she is kind of something that people obsess about, even if they obsess about her dying.
So what's the champion going to get? And I'm not even going to start getting into High School Musical versus Nirvana.
You know, what is the lifelong fame for being the inaugural Geek Force 5 champion?
Yeah.
A free copy of Those Little Bastards, my first book.
I see. Well, you heard it here first, person who listens to our podcast.
So what's going on your in your neck of the web? Since we've talked about mine for probably way too long.
Well, let's see. It's been a little bit of a slow week and a half or so. My grandmother was very sick, so.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, she's doing okay right now, but kind of distracted from the old website. Well, I made a St. Patrick's Day mix that nobody cares about. Not even the people who are supposed to care about these things. I just need a minute.
I would listen to it right now, but we are recording the podcast.
No, that's fine. I perfectly understand. You probably got too much Britney Spears to listen to. Maybe Kelly Clarkson.
Hey, wait. There's nothing wrong with Kelly Clarkson.
No, except that she's Kelly Clarkson. And, so I've been poking to that. I'm still working on recording some of the old entries. I've been kind of doing some exploratory work of creating a forum that nobody could use for Generation Goat as a way of people giving feedback, or whoever you are giving feedback. It's been an infrastructure week over at Songs to Save Your Life this week. There's a post, a long form post in the works, and I'm thinking of starting a feature of kind of new music, maybe an MP3 blog kind of thing. So,
oh, very cool.
Yeah, haven't decided how exactly I'm going to make that happen. I haven't decided if I'm going to put together like a playlist / podcast of new music, so as to avoid specific cease and desist issues, or if I'm going to follow a model of something like Stereo Gum or Yellow Stereo or whatever, where it's, you know, they're up for a little while and then they're down.
Yeah,
those seem to work pretty well. So, kind of doing the research for the legality issues, and once that's all sorted out. I will hopefully, maybe, just possibly get my first cease and desist letter, and I'll finally arrive. So
I can't say that I've ever received a cease and desist letter. Cease and desist. No, that's not right.
Yeah, it's maybe. I've gotten this from girls in high school. but yeah. That's a whole other issue.
Girls in high school generally didn't acknowledge my existence.
Well,
so I didn't really get anything from them.
But that's okay, because now you get to malign them in prose.
This is true. Do I malign girls in my prose?
Well, I'm trying to think through your 01824 series of a character that comes off as positive. and I'm trying. But I don't know. Maybe if the person who listens to this also reads that, they can set us straight.
Maybe. It's not that I intentionally go out there and try to make people come off poorly.
It just happens.
It just happens.
Because they themselves are poor.
Well, you know, there were a lot of interesting people that went to our high school, and then and not our high school, and just people we interacted with in our youth. And most of the characters that appear in my fiction are sort of amalgamations of those folks, and so they just happen to be the distilled terribleness of people rather than the distilled goodness of people. Maybe my novel's a little bit different on that front. I'm not sure, but maybe it's just a tendency of mine to see the worst in people.
So when do we get to see the novel?
Oh, well, you know, I finished the first part of the novel this past week. That's why things were a little bit lighter on the Geek Force 5 side. The first part of the novel is 4 chapters long, probably somewhere, I can't do math, somewhere in the vicinity of 100 pages or so.
Take the radius of the novel and multiply it by the height of the novel, and I don't remember.
Yeah, well, yeah. So I think it would still come out to somewhere around 100 pages. I'm not entirely sure, but
okay.
Yeah. So I finished the first part. And of course, this is like the fifth or sixth revision of the darn thing. So the whole thing exists,
somewhere.
But to make a long story short, too late. I hope to be done by the fall.
Nice.
That would be wonderful. Start showing it to people and exploring publishing options. Which is a whole other kettle of fish, because you know, there's part of me that wants the, you know, big name book contract and whatever, and there's part of me that the entrepreneurial part of me that's been self-publishing since I was 12 or 13 that thinks I think it's time for a group of like-minded individuals to get together and sort of redefine how publishing and distribution works. So there's that part of me. I don't think I would ever self-publish again in the using the print-on-demand that I use to publish Those Little Bastards. But I do think that the way things are published now is a little bit broken. And so I'm thinking about that at the same time that I'm thinking about finishing it.
I suppose though that when you think about kind of the way, I mean, I guess part of the appeal, apart from the big contract and the fact that you could show up places and say, I'm a writer, and people would
write you,
is that, you know, in a way, the distribution network that the major publishers have is really what you want. I mean, you really want to make sure that your book can get into as many hands as possible, which I think is probably the biggest hurdle for kind of low-run self-publish.
Absolutely.
So that's be interesting to see how that plays out, I think.
I was listening last night to, there's a guy, I've forgotten his name, but the podcast is called Well-Rounded Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing an interview. He does interviews with musicians and
that's thought, not, quote, sorry to interrupt you. That's not Sir Mix-a-Lot's program, is that?
No, it's
okay.
Not.
Sorry.
it'd be funny if it was. He does interviews with musicians and with quote unquote thought leaders. I don't really like that term.
Is that a real term?
It is a real term. I've heard it used.
It's not in the book 1984.
It is a real term I've heard thrown around.
Okay.
So he was doing an interview with the guy who runs TuneCore.
Okay.
which if our listener is not familiar, TuneCore was used by Nine Inch Nails, among others, is being used by Aretha Franklin to distribute to all of the major and some of the minor electronic music stores. I even think that our good pal Andy Hicks of the Pluto Tapes may have used TuneCore.
Yeah.
And while I'm listening to it, I got around to thinking, like, why couldn't something like this work for books? I think part of it is that books are still, in many instances, bought in brick-and-mortar stores and not online. So you really can get distribution anywhere through Amazon, and it's not that hard.
Yeah.
So that part's taken care of, but getting out to all the places people buy books probably does still require that sort of big publishing house behind you.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of the problem is that if you want to reach the widest possible audience in any aesthetic project, you have to basically give up the notion that there's a nobility in being, you know, kind of undiscovered. You know, like in the way it is with indie bands, you know, like, oh yeah, I used to see these guys when the only place they played was a bar down the street and they were awesome, but now they're in a big label, and, you
right.
know, I mean, now they're terrible and they've never been good because they've always wanted to be in a big label, which is nonsense. You know, anybody who engages in any creative project wants to make money. So I think the place where it becomes difficult, when people want to start up these independent ventures, is that there are always the sort of people who are rightly disillusioned with the major establishment, but at the same time don't want to take the useful or the really good parts of the major establishment and use them to their own ends. You know, like, well, if they sell books in Starbucks or the, you know, supermarket, well, we can't do that. That's out.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's about retaining both kind of an individual coolness at the same time as it's about trying to make money, which is, I mean, they might be mutually exclusive goals. I don't know.
That's why I think any such venture that I would enter into, and I've talked with some people about doing something like this, would have to include people at bookstores and people who sort of are there on the ground, knowing how things work.
Yeah.
And absolutely would not want to be involved with people who are like, we do not want to sell books at Starbucks, or we do not want to sell books at the supermarket. That sort of attitude, I think, is absolutely a problem. I think you've identified a big problem with some of the, but I do think that you could start with something relatively small and relatively regional, and try to build an audience and then attract the attention of a major publisher. I think what it comes down to is they are a business and they need to make money. And if you can convince, ultimately, whether you go directly to them through an agent, whether you've already published and you're showing them how many books you've sold, it all comes down to proving that you're a worthwhile investment. However you can do that,
you know, it's thinking about kind of the regional issue, it's a really great book, which is fairly popular, fairly common, Michael Ashered's Our Band Could Be Your Life, which kind of chronicles the rise of independent music through the late 70s and the 80s, and it does it with chapters on different kind of seminal bands, as it were. And you know, a lot of, you know, the quick and dirty version, which I think actually in a way kind of could carry over to the book trade, right? You get a lot of people who say, well, what is it that the record companies have that we don't? Money and distribution. They're in all the stores, they've got the radio.
Right.
But what people realized was, well, we can go to the plant and have them press our record for pennies, and then we can just distribute ourselves. You know, we'll build our own network, we'll get our own word of mouth, and, you know, we're mom and pop stores. And the end of the story, after that's successful, because we know it does finally succeed with college radio and with, you know, your average record store being willing to take a chance, and a word of mouth touring thing, and a real collaborative effort between these bands, you end up with a lot of these labels, you know, they're making some money, but they're not making big money. finally coming under the umbrella of larger companies, but with, you know, relative autonomy. And I suppose like a model like that is really kind of what you're talking about, right? I mean, where you've got, you know, a few people, a few authors, or a few publishers of different kinds kind of banding together and hoping to gain the material support of a larger entity without sacrificing integrity. So, I mean, the model's been done. It can be done.
Yeah. So I'm interested in that, and I hope to be talking with people some more about that. But of course, the key thing is just finishing the book.
And being
happy with it. Yeah. and then, of course, I can go out and try out for American Literary Idol. That doesn't exist now, does it?
If only that.
That's just a figment of my imagination.
If only that were something that got promoted. but it's hard to, you know, be a diva and write books. So, alas.
And you'd have to basically be the first one to win to ever really have a career, because every winner afterwards, you know.
They're not winners, but.
If they're not winners, are you saying that they are losers?
I would have to say so. I mean, the thing is, whenever. I know, America, I know you're going to hate me. What can I say? But whenever I think about American Idol, the only thing I can remember, and it's true in a way, is I think of Lester Bangs in Almost Famous. And I think about, you know, how he's talking about all these music magazines that just want to write sanctimonious stories about rock stars, and how they're going to ruin rock and roll and strangle everything that we love about it. And in a sense, American Idol has encouraged a sort of, it's a la carte consumerism, you know, it's, we'll vote for a star, they will become a great musician, they will put out records that we love, and there we are. Without respect for the fact that actual artistic production requires creativity and talent and something worth saying. You know, I don't want to go and buy an album by Clay Aiken where it's covers of pop songs from the 50s. Why do I want that? You know, and why do I want to watch for however many weeks to get to the point where I have the ability to buy that?
Now, do you think it's possible for people, for an artist to rise above that sort of beginning?
Well, my question would be, have you ever encountered someone who came out of a boy band that's worth much of anything?
Well, not in terms of rock and roll, certainly, but I think a pop music fan could argue that that Justin Timberlake has had some measure of success, and his, as a producer, as somebody who, I'm digging myself a hole here. I think there is something to be said in the pop music sphere for somebody like that. Now, all the rest of his bandmates couldn't say anything positive about any of them, and bandmates is even a stupid. They're not a band.
Well, there are obviously exceptions to a rule, but not that I've watched it, because I don't. I've encountered two things on American Idol by accident, and they both made me angry, so I left the room. but, you know, yeah, the first season, second season, you could kind of imagine that people thought they were actually in some sort of actual talent competition.
Mm-hmm.
But look at what you read about now. You know, I mean, you read about the William Hung guy, who people vote for because it's ironic. You read about that, what was his name, Sanjaya, with his stupid hair.
And like, you read about the girl with who showed up and tried out in a bikini, and she was.
And now it's a variety show.
It is absolutely the. Not to go too astray here, but isn't that the whole point of the podcast?
We don't have a point. Nobody's listening anyway.
That like a goat, we go wherever the grass is.
That's right.
Or something.
Or the tin cans, or whatever.
It's the curse of every reality TV show Although some might say that reality TV is itself a curse.
It's what they want, though.
But if you look back at the first couple of seasons of The Real World, they weren't particularly real, but they were real people with real jobs and not just teenagers seeking to become reality TV stars and then to parlay that reality TV stardom into a speaking career or whatever. You know, in the first season of Real World, you had musicians, you had a writer, a guy who's gone on to actually write for successful magazines. Yep. You had then you had Eric Nies, so, you know, he balances things off. But you had people who actually did things. And there was, I actually watched maybe the first three seasons of that, and then they had
but Beyond Puck, Beyond Pedro, it all,
Yeah, well, once you have Pedro, once you have a guy who actually, you know, dies of a disease that the place, it really becomes real, and then everyone gets uncomfortable with reality, and it goes in the total opposite direction.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the reason that happens, though, is that people want reality TV because most people either like having schmucks to make fun of, or they want, quote, talent that isn't threatening. You know, no one is ever going to, you know, listen to a Kelly Clarkson or a whoever and say, wow, that transcends my ideas of beauty. That reaches a place in my soul that I have never imagined was possible. No. People are going to listen to it and go, oh, a girl can kind of sing a tune, it's catchy. And that's not threatening. And I think that as we ourselves, you know, not to get too heavy on the goat, but I think as we ourselves become a lazier society, that's what we want. We want entertainment that doesn't make us remember that we could be a whole lot more than we are. We just want to be comfortable.
Have you seen the WALL-E? Have you seen WALL-E?
I have not seen WALL-E yet, but I am familiar with the story.
Yeah, the revelation of what the human beings look like at the end, and that is just, that. It's interesting. It's a remarkable comment. I agree with a poster or somebody who wrote to me either on the site or on Twitter.
I thought you meant an actual poster on a wall. Yeah. You're right. Sorry. Star Trek is coming out in May.
Whoever it was said to me that they thought WALL-E was possibly the best picture of the year. And I didn't see a lot of the best picture nominees, but I definitely think WALL-E was a remarkable film. And that Pixar just continues to amaze me in terms of what they're able to put out.
That Pixar.
Yeah. And Pixar, who's Pixar against in that first round? I'm curious.
Probably Jesus.
Pixar is against Heroes. Yes. And American Idol is against The Colbert Report.
That's just... What would be the ideological underpinning of such a pair?
I don't know.
If you like... I mean, you've got two parodies against each other, which is kind of impressive. I'm actually looking over your list right now. And it seems that many of these pairings come down to old versus new. You know, you've got Guitar Hero versus D&D, which don't serve the same function exactly, but both of them cause teenagers to stay up till 3 in the morning.
Most of it's totally by accident, too. What I did is I went through and wrote what I thought were the top 16 things in each category and sort of rearranged them based on what I thought had staying power, was relevant to the culture at large and not just I was about to say, what is the word for the geek Illuminati? I wanted to basically represent things, and then I paired them up against one another, and I didn't move anything around at that point. I just was surprised by the pairings. That's how you ended up with High School Musical versus Nirvana. I did not do that on purpose.
Speaking of unusual pairings, just see what I did there. I actually thought for a moment I was looking over the list of things that we were maybe going to talk about.
Uh-huh.
That we can see each other right now, which sometimes creates odd bits of conversation, but it seems that we're going to be able to see a lot more of something of yours soon. You mentioned a filming project upcoming.
Yeah, well,
see what I did there? The worst segue ever.
Well, no, it's not a bad segue. Since as usual, I have been hogging the conversation and talking about me.
That's right. I'm working on my voodoo doll over here.
And now I'm concerned with a paperclip that dropped on the ground. Should stop. Yes, let it go. Talk about the filming.
If you love it, set it.
So filming, yeah. Well, when I first started the 01824 series, I which is a text-based series for those of you who have never visited my website.
A text adventure, if you will.
A text adventure with lots of unlikable characters.
That's right. But you do get to choose your own route through the book.
Right. Well, it is hypertext, so you could start wherever the hell you feel like. So I wanted it to be more of a multimedia thing eventually, and I have always had an interest in both theater and film, and so I thought it would be fun. I have a camera, and I said, I have people who I know who like to act or who produce music. I have all these things, and why am I going to wait until I'm old and gray and can't do anything about it to do one of the things I've always wanted to do, which is to make a film or a webisodic TV show. And this all came together with writing the latest installment of 01824, which is a set of liner notes for an album that doesn't exist. It's the liner notes for all of the music and bands in the novel. Mm-hmm. And I'm writing it from the perspective of a young 17, 18-year-old who is sort of the next generation of the family that's covered in the novel, and she's looking back on everything. And I really like this character and her voice, and I thought it would be really fun to go back to the old stomping grounds in Chelmsford and Lowell and all those places and get a really talented young actress. I'm sure I could find one and look at things now and do something kind of crazy and fun. See what's become of all of the things that I'm writing about in the book.
Well, that's very cool.
Yeah, thanks.
I may have some band paraphernalia I could donate to your cause.
I'll
have to look into that.
Yeah.
So when will this happen, or when might this happen?
Well, I don't know. I'd like to get as many people. That's another thing. Is part of the reason I want to do it is I want to work with friends, and so it will all sort of depend on when people are home for the summer or around. And since I think it'll be a series rather than a film, I think as long as I've got an actress to play this role who is available for a while, I can film it over the course of the whole summer, here and there. My brother will be home from California at some point. I don't think I could do a film project without including him, since he's the one that went out to Hollywood and actually tried to get things done. I just want to get everybody that I can involved in it and just have fun.
Cool.
If I do it on nothing more than just my little flip video camera, which records VHS or DVD quality, then fine. I'm not looking for anything tremendously professional. I just want to have fun.
Well, if I could be of any service, that sounds very exciting.
Definitely. I actually
started a writing project myself. Got my copy of Final Draft, dusted it off. Off even. I didn't dust it that often, so I don't dust it off. But that's okay. Revisited actually a similar territory. Revisited our old script about a band in Trio Unit, which we've teased here before, and which I'm sure one day will leak out to the internet somewhere.
Yes.
but not before undergoing a bit of rewrite, a bit of play. I've decided to make a slightly more serious and realistic version of events, and we shall see. So that's my new writing project. I kind of have these like bizarre notions that one day someone somewhere will want to do something with it.
I still love that project and love that idea, and don't think the thing that always was interesting to me is we started writing that at the same time. We were starting to write the novel, and both things had bands in them, but the bands are slightly different and they take different paths. And so I'm still very interested in seeing both of those things come to fruition. Now we should say Trio of Emus actually has more than three members in the draft that I last read.
It does.
Do you think any sort of big significant changes to it that you're thinking about that you want to tease?
No, not really. I think right now we're looking at four, maybe five people. Just keeping it down. There's a villain among them, who is more or less the villain that used to be. And there you go. Listener, that was the least exciting tease ever. let's just talk about Lost.
Let's talk about Lost. We should talk about Lost. And if you haven't, if you are even interested in Lost, listener, and you haven't seen it, you've had 2 weeks to see it.
Then you're clearly a poser, right?
Somebody actually said to me today, I watched four episodes of Lost and then stopped. It just wasn't my thing. They said this on Twitter, and I was as polite as I could be about it, but I was just like, four episodes?
I've written you off. That's it. If you were drowning, I would not save you.
I don't understand it. And they're talking about 24 to me, which, you know, I saw a little bit of 24 here and there.
That's
all right.
I've been watching this season. It's as incredulous as the rest of them.
But, you know, they don't want to give any. They don't want to give the time of day to my show. I'm not going to give the time of day to their show. Damn it.
Yeah. Take that. That'll
Lost.
Show them with things that don't matter at all.
So the last episode of Lost was LeFleur. They haven't really done centric episodes in the way that they've done them in the past, but this one was kind of a Sawyer centric episode, wouldn't you say?
I thought it was a great episode for Sawyer.
He hasn't had one in a while. It seems like a couple of seasons we've gone without a great Sawyer episode.
That's true, and he's finally completed his journey towards likable. And well, I mean, I always kind of liked him anyway, but now he's, you know, a nice guy, which is a little strange. I also want to drop Kate in a big black hole, like you.
Yeah, yeah. For the listener who hasn't read my review, I loved this episode until like the last 10 seconds. The moment that the Oceanic 5 or 4 or however many, no, there's only three of them. the moment that Kate, Hurley, and Jack get out of that van, I wanted to push Kate off the cliff and into the ocean. Just that look she gives him, and it's not even so much that I'm another word that I hate, a shipper. You know, I'm not like shipping for Jack and Kate or for Sawyer and Kate or any of that. Like, that's not what it is. It's that we have this brilliant story going, and we only spent one episode on it, and now we've already got to bring these guys back into things. I feel like,
it was inevitable that they would return, but...
Sure, but did we have to bring them back this quickly?
Yeah, I liked it. Although, you know, maybe we'll hang out there for a little while longer. They are still trapped in the early 80s, so late 70s. So.
Or 77, I think.
That's right, they're weird.
I only remember because I was born in 77. When they did the time jump thing, I was like, wow, that means that Ethan... I actually think that the baby is Ethan for various reasons. And I said, wow, that means that Ethan's the same age as me. Weird.
Well, there you go.
Of course, it may not be Ethan. I don't have a lot to base that on. But it's a boy. And it seemed to me that the boy might be important and someone we may have met before. And I felt like that makes it either sort of Ethan or Goodwin, and Goodwin
too
seems
young
a little
for Goodwin, different. I think.
Yeah, and I also like this the idea of Juliet helping to deliver Ethan.
That was pretty special.
If it is Ethan, and I just love that. I love Juliet. I sort of go both ways on Juliet in terms of sometimes I really, really like her, and then other times she does get on my nerves. Most of the time I really like her.
I love Juliet. I think she's great.
I think she's the best. She and Sun now are sort of tied for best female character for me. Mm. And I never thought I'd say that about Sun. But I really liked that Juliet, sort of her arc, that she was finally able to deliver a child, and that they didn't make a big. What was great was there were so many subtler moments in this. They didn't make a big deal about that, but if you followed the show for a long time, you know what a big moment that was for her.
I'm gonna miss it when it's gone, I tell you.
Have you heard the title of the finale?
I think I saw it on your site, actually. But we should tell the listener, just the same.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to say it in case you were trying to stay pure and not find out. But the title of the finale is The Incident. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what that says to you. I talked about it a little bit this morning on my Geek Force Utters podcast. And so I'll let you take the floor and tell me what you think about The Incident as a title.
No, I don't really have a concrete theory myself. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're a season out from things wrapping up, so, it could be anything. They're in the past, so it could be the final rebellion, as it were, and the mm-hmm. rise of Ben, or it could be anything, really. I don't know. I'm trying to remain somewhat ignorant, but episode titles don't bother me.
I am tempted to remain more ignorant than I have in the past. I've always been pretty fond of spoilers, actually, for myself. No, I'm not fond of when people do it and put stuff out there and ruin it for people who don't want to know.
Yeah.
That really pisses the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. pisses
what,
the fuck out
you,
of me.
See what you did
sorry.
There? You tried to sound a little more hardcore, and now you look like an idiot. Nicely done. I know what you mean, though, about spoilers. So I get really touchy. I remember when Deathly Hallows came out, the next day was the same day that I was going to San Francisco for all those pumpkin shows.
Uh-huh.
And I remember being in the airport and seeing everyone and their cat holding a copy of this book, which was really kind of surreal. But being on the plane, I remember...
I can imagine a cat reading that.
It was very strange. Well, mostly surfing on it. But I remember the stewardess came down the... I'm not allowed to call them stewardesses anymore, am I? The flight attendant.
Flight attendant, yeah.
The aviation entertainment specialist. I don't know. Whatever they are. But anyway.
I think aviation entertainment specialist is something else entirely.
So I remember reading a book, and she came down, presumably to give me a drink. She's like, "Oh, did you get to the part where I'm like, shut up! Just shut up! Not another word out of you."
I had the experience of having been the first to finish it, and then wife, my sister-in-law, and my brother-in-law were all reading it in the car on a camping trip that summer or at the campsite, and I had to be quiet, and then each of them was reading at a different pace, so they would pull me aside to talk about what had just happened.
The more annoying thing, though, I always find is that I'll finish something before other people, and then you're trying not to ruin it, but they'll come up to you and be like, "So, okay, I just read this. Just tell me, is this going to happen? Is that going to happen?" It's like, look, if I can ruin the book for you, just let me ruin the book. Otherwise, just hurry up.
Right. Stephanie has done that with me and watching TV show. Generally, I watch, until recently, I've watched like Lost and Heroes, and generally those are the two we watch, and I've seen them long before she has. Mm-hmm. And she'll turn to me and she'll say, you know, is that what's going to happen there? And I said, do you really want me to spoil it?
Like, because I
just
will.
Just watch.
Life is tough.
Yeah. So, do you watch Heroes?
I do sort of watch Heroes.
I've missed the last couple of episodes. My brother-in-law is super into it.
The last four episodes of Heroes I've seen, I've actually been watching them while web surfing. So that shows you about my level of interest, really.
The show, I don't know, it could be so much more than it is, but it's pretty entertaining for what it is.
I think the problem is that the people who put that show together clearly decided early on, oh, we're making a comic book, and comic books are full of wacky stuff and crazy plot twists and unexpected things. But that's true, but having just read the Watchmen graphic novel, you know, I'm reminded that, yeah, but good comics always have two things. They have, you know, narrative unity in the sense that the same conditions tend to apply throughout the book. The universe has, like, a set of fixed boundaries.
Right.
And they do always go somewhere that satisfies, you know, what you've just been put through.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you look at even famous Spider-Man arcs involving Venom, or, you know, the Days of Future Past with the X-Men or something. Mm. Like, however bizarre the universe, it's coming to a point. It's going to get somewhere.
Yeah.
And Heroes doesn't seem to have that. Heroes, you know, it's a TV program. It's, you know, it's serialized fiction in the way that the 19th century people who published in magazines for a penny a word or whatever, you know, a penny
right,
a page
right.
were,
mm-hmm.
You know, just trying to get volume. And, yeah, I mean, Heroes, I don't know what happened in the second season. I mean, I watched it, but, you know.
Couldn't tell you.
Third season was a little weird. So, I mean,
there were some Irish people in the second season.
There were.
To bring it back.
But, yeah, that was a little strange. And, you know, I mean, it's been picked up for another season now, apparently.
Yeah.
I hope that they'll start having... I think, honestly, it's just come to me that really its biggest problem is the same thing that eventually killed the X-Files, which is that they're endlessly complicating the story, but they never resolve any of the plots, you know?
Yeah.
And Chris Carter kept adding layers to the conspiracy, but he never consolidated, ended something, and then moved on until it was too late, until it was, you know, the end of season 7 or 8 or whatever, where he decided to kill everybody.
Right.
I think that's a real problem in storytelling.
Do you think that's a real problem? I think that's a real problem in most TV series, and it's a problem that Lost had in the middle and is now sort of overcoming because it has an end date.
I think Lost has been really solid so far.
Yeah, this season has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
I think you could sit down and it's one of these ones, you could watch this as a marathon and a whole day could get away from you and you'd not regret it.
No, hell, that's what I did with the first season. I mean, I got on board after like the 7th episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched them straight through.
Yeah, I did that with the first season. I borrowed the DVDs from you, and I happened to be homesick one day, and I popped it in, and I just sat there for 5 or 6 hours straight. You know, I got up for bathroom breaks and lunch, and
absolutely.
That was it.
Yeah, I can remember vividly just laying on the bed in the dark, just like, wow. And then going, oh, God, it's 10 in the morning again. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Is there any more?
I know. That's what's going to be the problem when it finally ends, is the answer to that will be no, there isn't anymore.
Everything's ending, you know? I mean, Lost is going to be over, and, you know, Battlestar, the first part of the finale has just come out. And,
That's one I have to catch up on. I have never seen an episode of Battlestar. Sorry to say.
It's really good. I
have had somebody say they're going to let me borrow the DVDs of the first season.
Do check it out.
Yeah, so I'm definitely looking forward to it.
I didn't expect to like it, because I saw the original, and all I could think was, really? That show? Oh my god.
Yeah, I vaguely remember the original too from childhood reruns, but I'm very much looking forward to that one. And then there are things that probably should come to an end that aren't. Trying to think of an example, but or things that never should have started.
I posit American Idol, but I think we have a difference there.
No. American Idol should definitely have come to a close.
But now it never ends.
The only disagreement we have is that I think Kelly Clarkson has some talent.
But
the first record is terrible. That's the American Idol record, and the American Idol record is always terrible. Her second album has strong points. Her third album is a step back, and her fourth album, it's not bad.
How long has she been putting out albums?
2002 or so, 2004. I can't remember.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, well, but now it'll never end because Simon Cowell has decided to have himself cryogenically frozen. So
because he imagines himself to be the next Walt Disney, the next Ted Williams.
I don't know. What does that mean? Does that mean that when this financial crisis and the environmental crisis that we're soon to face and all of these other things finally come to a head, that he will finally emerge as the desolate one and destroy the world? I'm scared, man.
I think that's a distinct possibility.
I'm really scared.
That's why somebody should drop something on the studio where they filmed that. It wasn't good past the first season. Like
the
real
world. See, what I don't understand about the show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got the Simon guy, and he runs a record label, and he signs all of these people to his label, and he takes 85% of their royalties. And somehow people want to be in on that.
Yeah.
And so he's a judge of talent. And I honestly don't know, and here's my ignorance, if Paula Abdul remains on the show.
But she does.
She's a judge of talent. And her last big song came out in, what, 90? 91?
Yeah, if that, yeah.
Maybe 89. So, okay. I guess Deborah Gibson was unavailable. And from what place did this Ruben guy come?
Oh, you mean Randy? Randy.
Sorry,
yeah.
My apologies.
Ruben was one of the winners of the.
He was a contestant. Yeah. My apologies.
I don't know where. Well, you know what, Randy? I had seen Randy play either bass or keyboards with a number of sort of R&B acts lately, and I think he was some sort of producer or something.
But I mean, so you pick three people that are fairly generic,
mm-hmm.
which I guess are the only people that can judge a variety show, which is. Contingent
right.
upon success, in as much as the most generic contestant with the broadest appeal is probably going to win.
Yeah.
But I don't understand how they're authorities. I don't understand why the legitimate music press actually chases these people down and covers them from time to time. I don't care what Simon Cowell is doing.
Mm.
He's a jerk. So what? Big deal. I know a lot of
jerks. Is there a legitimate music press anymore? Or should we be looking towards the illegitimate music press to provide us with our music information? The legitimate music press seems to be more the entertainment press now.
Yeah, I mean, Rolling Stone is a joke. Rolling Stone has been a joke for a real long time. You know, every now and again they break a decent story or they have a decent interview.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they're your dad's music press. You know, if your dad is also a 12-year-old girl.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't care. I mean, I was browsing their site the other day. The front page had an article on Britney Spears. It had another one on the Jonas Brothers. And there was one on Foghat.
That really is like the perfect, like your dad and your 15-year-old cousin.
Yeah, so, all right. You know, great.
But that's disparaging 15-year-olds or 12-year-olds because some of them actually have taste. We had taste when we were that age. Right.
Sure about that. But, yeah. So, I don't know. And, I mean, Spin has always been a little more tolerable. Mm-hmm. Probably for the inclusion of Chuck Klosterman. But, I don't know. I mean, some of the best stuff I read now is, you know, Pitchfork is predictably grumpy, but they you put together a heck of a website and Stereo Gum, and you know, there's a lot of music blogs that, you know, I think really have taken up the mantle and really combined, you know, kind of a wealth of knowledge about their area and the music that they're passionate about with, you know, all the these wonderful Web 2.0 tools for keeping in touch and getting content out. I think that's really, it's become, I mean, this is what, it's updated zine culture, right?
Yeah.
That's really what we're dealing with. And I think that that was always the more satisfying stuff to read. And it's cool that it's so easily found. You don't have to go to odd shops in Central Square to buy your zines now.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Although that unfortunately means there aren't as many odd shops in Central Square because they're, you know,
cycle of life.
Yeah.
But anyway, so anything we should look forward to this week?
I'm going to finish up the Silver Family Singers chapter of 01824. Mm-hmm. And going to talk about the tournament a little bit more, hopefully get this going. And looking forward to reviewing the next episode of Lost. That's what's coming from me. How about you?
Gonna do some updating to the old goats page. Probably, as I said, create a little forum that nobody will use, and integrate a little box so that people can just send us a message to Twitter right from the site, which will
Great.
Be helpful. Apart from that, I've got a long form entry thinking about this MP3 blog thing. And getting ready. I'm going on vacation next week.
Awesome. Where are you going?
I'm going to Italy and Switzerland.
That is awesome. You can say, I'm going on vacation to Italy and Switzerland. Where am I going on vacation? The White Mountains.
Yeah, but to be fair, Italy is about as far as, you know, I mean,
yeah.
I'm going basically as far as, like, New York. So.
Right. I know. I'm just being jealous.
It's not all it's cracked up to be. Although, I am excited because in the north of Italy, they have just unveiled a new type of vending machine.
Oh, boy.
Which makes pizzas. Who doesn't want to see that in person?
I want to see that in person.
Apparently, Italy has more vending machines than any other country in Europe. About 100,000 more than they do in the UK. So... this is what I do instead of working on my dissertation. I read these things. So next week and the week after will be a little slow, but hopefully we can squeeze in a goat before we go. And
all right.
And then hopefully
Sounds
you won't
like a
have
plan to,
to
me.
Overlay Buddy Holly on it. Hopefully the trip will go fine.
Yeah. Hopefully, yes. I do not want to overlay Buddy Holly. Okay. You got to make sure you tell me how the pizza out of the vending machine. We'll have to report
that
on
person.
That.
I mean, come on. Forget
take
about
a
it.
Take a photo or a video.
Or I'll send you one of the pizzas. I mean. But apparently its gimmick is that it's all fresh ingredients. So
excellent.
I don't know, right? I mean, who knows?
Right?
So there we are. Thank you, listener, for doing this as part of your community service.
Yes, thank you.
And we'll see you next time.
See ya.